You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Nope, can't hear you, Bruce. So we want to welcome you to Federal Prison Authorities Around the Block. You're still muted, Bruce. And Bruce is working on his tech right now. Nope. You have no sound. So while he's working on that, I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk about today. And he'll join us as soon as it works. It really was working just a minute ago. Anyway, we had planned one show, but then we have had a lot of communication on the, we had a post and a lot of comments on the Facebook group regarding the very recent proposed amendments from the U.S. Sentencing Commission. And we thought we would talk about that. They are currently open for public comment. And on the surface, they sound really positive. And but Bruce and I, in talking about it, we just we see some downsides. And we think it was important to kind of talk about that and kind of give you our opinion based on how we know things work with the Bureau and with FSA. And then let you decide. And so that when you're commenting, if you're sending letters to the commission, you can, of course, you know, oop, looks like Bruce has got sound.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Am I on?
There you go.
All right. Sorry about that, everybody. It's crazy.
Had a little on the fly conversation.
Yeah. Absolutely. You've been doing a great job. Yep.
So we were just talking about it and the impact of this. And while on the surface, it sounds like a good thing, for those of you who perhaps haven't read it, in December, the commission published a whole bunch of proposed amendments. And one of them was an add-on to the acceptance of responsibility portion, and it covered post-offense rehabilitation. And that sounds really good. But
I was going to say, post offense, even post sentencing, right?
So this
but
is
not necessarily. This, yeah.
Right. So this is post offense. So somebody is in trouble. They are in their pretrial status. They have not even got as far as a plea agreement at this point in time. Haven't been sentenced. No pre-sentence investigation report. None of that's happened yet. So just before we kind of jump into that, I think it'd be really helpful just to kind of talk about from the Bureau's perspective, the different phases, right? So pretrial refers to, in terms of getting credit, time credit, it's that jail credit. It's that time when a person's been arrested and they're sitting in either a jail, a county jail with the marshals, or perhaps they're in a Bureau detention facility. The entire time up until the day of sentencing is pretrial. From the day a person is sentenced until they arrive at a Bureau of Prisons facility, if they are in official custody, that is considered holdover time. Now, we all know when a person is sentenced, there are two things that can happen. They can be voluntary surrendered, or they can voluntary surrender, or my brain just stopped working, or they can
be
remanded. Thank you. Yep. They can be remanded to custody. Another thing that happens is in the period in between when you're in official detention. So when you're sitting in a jail, or you, if you're sitting in a Bureau facility specifically, if you're sitting in one of the detention centers, from the time you enter that plea agreement and it is accepted until sentencing. So once that plea agreement is entered or a person is found guilty, that's when the judge orders a pre-sentence investigation report. And then that period in between there is holdover time, but it's a marshal holdover time versus Bureau holdover time, which comes later when you're moving between institutions, right? So we have before a guilty plea or a finding of guilt. Then we have sentencing. Then we have arriving at the Bureau's institutions. So this period covers, essentially, because it impacts sentencing, it covers any time from arrest up through sentencing. And in looking at the language, a couple of things kind of stand out to me. And Bruce, feel free to jump in here at any moment. One of the things we talked about, and I want to make sure I read it correctly. So they talk about if the defendant qualifies under this subsection and positive post-offense behavior or rehabilitative efforts were undertaken before criminal investigation, criminal prosecution, the decrease of 1 or 2 points. So again, at this point, we're still in that you've gotten in trouble, but we haven't moved anywhere, right? Nothing's happened. The basis for the adjustment is if the defendant has demonstrated sustained commitment to positive behavioral change, evidenced by post-offense behavior or rehabilitative efforts that go beyond typical actions undertaken by defendants prior to sentencing. So what does that mean?
That's a lot of latitude. That's a lot of subjectivity.
It's a lot of latitude.
A lot of subjectivity, yes.
What is typical? So arguably, from my perspective, if I'm on the prosecution side, and we've got somebody who has been found guilty, entered a plea agreement, right? And actually, I think this only applies if you accept responsibility. So this is only applying, if I read it right, it's only applying to those individuals who don't go to court. So you're pleading. But if in between pleading guilty and getting sentencing is when you decide to do something so that your pre-sentence investigation report looks better, if I'm a prosecutor, I'm going to go, is that really evidencing that you're trying to change your behavior, right? Question mark, right?
Well, it's a factual write-up. I mean, as soon as it'll be in the substance use or mental health or whatever, it'll be written up factually as activities that the person took place in pre-trial. And Susan, won't it be up to the judge or?
It will be, but when you put this latitude in here that says, and that's one of the things that I kind of questioned was evidence by post-behavior rehabilitative efforts that goes beyond typical actions undertaken by a defendant prior to sentencing. So does starting to, after you've pled guilty and this PSR is going to get written and you're waiting for sentencing, is going to AA once a week now or going to NA once a week now? Or you and I have had people call us and say, hey, can I do some counseling now? That's probably the wrong time to start it, right? If you're from when you're in trouble, if you're recognizing that you need to be moving in a certain direction, the earlier you start, the better. Now, right. Why and they had several things. Let me back up before I kind of be critical. They talk about paying restitution voluntarily. Like, you're going to have it ordered, starting to pay it earlier. Completing or successfully participating in treatment programs addressing drugs, alcohol, or gambling. Mental health counseling, anger management, GED or similar programs, vocational training, skills programming, obtaining and maintaining gainful employment, providing voluntary and consistent financial support for family and dependents, child support, alimony, right? Or if you have an intact, you're taking care, you're paying the bills, you're taking care of family. Performing volunteer or other civic, charitable, or public service to the community. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. These are all great things, but should we go back a little bit and say it's only certain types of people
with like what? No priors or no criminal history? Like, should we talk about the type of people that it qualifies for?
At this point, this is an add-on to the acceptance of responsibility. It's really not going into, like,
I thought there were other conditions.
Well, it starts at the beginning. It says, it's talking about, hold on, let me back up. This is in the section under acceptance of responsibility. So if you're entering a plea agreement, in determining whether a defendant qualifies for a reduction under this subsection, the court shall consider the actions and efforts voluntarily taken by the defendant for the benefit of the defendant's own rehabilitation, victims of offense, the community, or other people. So if you're fighting your case and going to court, this is off the table, just like the 3 points acceptance of responsibility are off the table. Now, so there's a lot of good things in here about, you know, kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of buying your time down, right? Because you're doing this programming and the judge and the prosecutor and everybody can agree and you can get some more points off.
Take it off.
Right. Those sentencing guideline points. And if I read correctly, it can be as possibly as many as up 4. Let me see. Additional levels. Yeah.
So the person has to be engaged in all these activities before the completion of the PSR?
Presumably, because that's where it's going to be documented.
Okay.
So now, where are some of the problems with this? Because it all sounds good, right? And I've kind of ranted before about certain things that happen, whether it's the Sentencing Commission or politicians. They put a lot of words down that they feel really good about. And I'll be the first to say, I 100% think that incentivizing program participation is actually a good thing, right? I'm a case manager at heart. Like, you remember me as a case manager. Like, I told folks, like, don't talk to me about anything until you've gotten your high school diploma. Like, I don't ask me for anything because I was mean about it, right? But Here's the problem. From the Bureau, from FSA standpoint, first off, let's talk about programming. If you're sitting in a detention center, if you're sitting in a jail, well, then you have whatever may or may not be available to you if you if you haven't been bonded. So if that jail has something, and we've heard people talk about that. Hey, I was in the jail, not a Bureau facility, a jail somewhere, and I did these programming and the Bureau won't count it. Because they're not the Bureau programs, right? They're not Bureau programs. There's some county jail somewhere. So if you're sitting in jail and you're participating in these programs and they let you, awesome. That's great. If you're sitting in a Bureau detention facility, you are a Marshall's prisoner in a Bureau facility. Providing programming is not the primary goal of the Bureau. I mean, yes, you may participate in some programming, but here's one of the challenges. And when I was still working, I used to have heartburn with some of our psychologists out in the field. And this was just me because, well, they had this class and, you know, and they're on the same floor as this unit. And, you know, and so they have, you know, individuals in the class who are either pretrial or holdover, right? They're not in a Bureau facility yet. I mean, they're in a detention center, but they're not a Bureau person. Some of them weren't even sentenced yet. Yes, they were wanting takes because they wanted to look better for the courts. Except when it comes to what counts on pattern, nothing counts before sentencing. You have to have been sentenced. So if you complete a program that might have counted an ACE course, that might have counted toward pattern while you were sitting over in Chicago, hanging out, waiting to have the go through the process. Okay, now maybe the courts will consider that you took this course. Maybe you take anger management. That's an EBBR. Maybe you take anger management. Maybe psychology at Chicago lets you do it, or Miami, or wherever you're at. But if you take it before sentencing, which is what you need here, it is not going to count on your pattern score, because pattern is about your recidivism risk that is mitigated through program participation while incarcerated.
But and they can still take it to get the reduction
they
on,
could.
The, on the points.
But if they take it and they don't get the reduction, and now they're wanting to count for your pattern, it's not. And will a psychology person now at an institution looks as if, oh, you did this already. And then you say, well, oh, but it didn't count for my pattern. I need to take it again. I only have 12. Those anger management classes have 12 slots apiece. You've already had it once.
Couldn't psychology or whatever just pencil whip it? It's on PDS or whatever. Say, okay, give them credit.
Then they're entering stuff into Sentry that didn't happen at a time when it you know what I mean? Like they're altering.
Oh, right. They could
altering the record because
right.
they
no,
took
no, no,
it.
You're right. Right. Because they couldn't.
Or
they couldn't get
the
Sentry,
individual
right.
who does get credit from the court and now wants to get credit on his pattern as well, because he could get credit in his court, but he could still be medium risk level.
Yep.
And it's going to count in one or the other. You don't get the double dip. Now, the one exception to programming during either the pretrial or the holdover phase that will benefit someone is completing their GED. Having a GED impacts custody classification, impacts pattern, and it's not about when you did it. It's just a matter of do you have it or not to have it. So because they will enter, because once you get to a bureau facility, whether you completed your GED on the street, you completed your GED in pretrial or holdover, when you get to the institution, you still have your GED. Now, one of my biggest heartburns with this is things like for individuals who are remanded to custody, who don't get to voluntary surrender, who were held in detention. And we've seen cases, guys sitting in pretrial status for 2 years, right? You and I have seen those cases. Are they going to count institution employment? Because when you're in pretrial status, you can volunteer, volunteer to work. Are they going to count that or no? Right. Are they going to count what that person is doing? If the person is working and then they're sending money home to their family to take care of their kids, are they going to consider that? Is probation even going to ask that question when it comes to the pre-sentence investigation report? And the reality is the group that gets helped the most by this is the group that gets the help the most with FSA. And that is our white collar offenders. Those individuals almost always are not held in detention. They're given a bond. They're out in the community. They can do of the things in here.
Yep. There you go.
They can.
And one of our Facebook members said how disproportionately, right? He very, very deftly said, "Hey, this is disproportionate to certain groups of people."
Absolutely.
He's right.
And so is FSA. And people get, you know, you and I have written about it. Like the group that is being benefited the most by time credits are the individuals that, one, walked in the door with minimum risk, have short sentences, would have likely participated in programming if for no other reason to pass the time. Those are the ones who are benefiting the most. And yeah, some of them are our clients, but those are the ones that are benefiting the most. It's not the person that has been in trouble with the law since they were 12 years old and has racked up all of these points and is now sitting there at high risk or medium risk because they got a criminal history score of 14 or 15 and they're under 30.
But even if I was a medium or whatever, medium plus, and I'm probably maybe even going to a medium and I'm pretrial, or I'm going to go to a USP pretrial, but I'm still going to try to take these programs for the benefit of the reduction in points in the PSR, regardless of my pattern.
Absolutely. Right? But then they're going to get to prison and they're going to go, well, wait a minute. I took this already. I did this already. Why aren't I getting credit on my pattern recidivism risk? And that's a legitimate question.
Well, goal one is what your PSR says. Goal two is working on your pattern once you're in a blessed and ordained designated institution. So you just got to be able to split your mind and say, I'm going to work on this curriculum while I'm in this stage. But once I go over to the real stage, there's going to be lawsuits. There's going to be people complaining. You're right. I get it. I totally get it because it is.
But the Bureau is still the amount of programming offered at a detention center is significantly lower.
Yeah.
Because it's pretrial. So then those individuals that are sitting there, maybe they're able to get into a GED class. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're able to get into anger management. Maybe. Right. And maybe they're told, you're pretrial. You're holdover. Sorry. Right. This is an EBBR class. We're trying to get these guys into it.
Yeah. I'm thinking
And it really disproportionately, because the guys that are on the street, the guys and gals who get the bond, who are sitting at home, you know, going through that pretrial status, 9 times out of 10, they also have the resources to see the therapist, to go to the treatment programs, to do all of these things.
Right. Because a lot of these guys, let's say Mansfield, Limestone County, I'm down here in Texas, y'all. So that's where I'm looking at these county, a Fannin County. So I'm looking at these county jails that, right, you're nodding your head because you may remember a few of those that have U.S. Marshals contracts. And they have a federal pod inside the county jail where, so there's a piece of the county jail that's dedicated for federal inmates that are U.S. Marshal prisoners that are moving through. They're either going to their designated joint or they're going to Oklahoma City or whatever. So now, so it depends on what's going on in that institution. Sometimes I say, I'm not gonna mess with you because you're a federal holdover. You may be gone tomorrow. Why am I going to invest in you? Why am I going to let you take a class and all this and that? Because you guys are so in and out and so transient, we can't keep track. We could barely keep track of you doing your time, much less I'm going to offer you some sort of a class. Now, that said, maybe there's other county jails that do have classes, and they have AA, and they have NA, and they have all these community volunteers doing these classes, and these guys and gals can participate in those classes. So it just varies by place. And like you said,
100%.
It'd be worse at a county jail.
The guys and gals that are in custody that don't get the opportunity to bond out are going to be significantly less likely to even have access to the program. So now they're sitting in the jails for however long a time it is. The only thing that you can say is, well, they're getting jail credit toward that sentence. But again, it's those individuals, and it irks me when I look at FSA and we don't incentivize all individuals.
But I this is great, like point counterpoint. Susan, everything you say is absolutely correct. However, if I'm going to be going to federal prison and I have any kind of chance to reduce my points before I go to, you know, I sign a deal, but if I can reduce my points that are on the PSR and that results in a better outcome for me, absolutely.
100%. But we're back to what group of individuals are going to get that opportunity realistically. It's the white collar folks who are already, they're the ones who are in the community. They're not sitting in a jail, be it a county jail under Marshall's hold or a detention center at a Bureau facility. They're sitting at home. They're able to work. They're able to pay their bills, pay that restitution that they know is coming, right? That they already know what this is all coming. And they're able to do all of these things, take advantage of this opportunity. And I don't fault them for doing it. I'm just looking at it from the perspective of the percentage of individuals that benefit. I mean, if you look at the Bureau's incarceration, if you look at the stats for the types of crimes folks in the Bureau are in for, the white collar, low level offender, that accounts for about, 5-6% of the population. Right. So this group who already gets to take full advantage of FSA in almost every circumstance from the very beginning, being able to earn, get to those 15 points in 208 days, some cases there's 218. In some cases they're getting, 208 days, some cases they're getting to it at 118 days. And now we're going to go and say, oh, here's another opportunity for you to shorten your sentence even more when we look at the rest of the population. I'm not saying it's not good for those that can take advantage of it, but I think we need to be honest about who's not getting to take advantage of it.
Right.
And that's a whole lot.
I mean, so, okay, well, help me through this one. Let's see. Person X, 2113, bank robbery. Person Y, armed carjacking. Person Z, you know, some sort of an egregious assault, all kinds of, you know, priors. So it's right for some of those people that you spoke of. Aren't they kind of sort of jammed up anyway because of their history?
They're jammed up because of their offense. So maybe those folks aren't going to get to take advantage of FSA. But what about all of the drug offenders? You and I see it all the time on the Facebook page. By the way, did you notice we went up for 16,000? We just blew right by 15,000. Anyway, I digress. The bulk of the folks, is their drug cases. Drug cases account for something like 60%, I think. I had to look at the page, but probably around 60-65% of the population. Most of them are eligible for FSA to earn it. There's another group within there that are not eligible. They're eligible to earn, but they can't apply it because they're high or they're medium risk. Right. Changing those sentencing points, it can shorten their sentence, but it's not going to impact their risk level because their risk level and the sentence length have nothing to do with each other.
Right.
So they are that group of people that are eligible. I mean, there's a good 30% of the population that are earning FSA and will never get to apply it because they can't earn enough points to work their risk levels down. Now I do know there's stuff going on in the Bureau there. You know, we have this thing in the policy and in the law that allows the wardens to make exceptions. And for those, for the first few years, wardens were very reticent to make exceptions. And from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of talk of if these guys are taking the programs, you know, they're taking the drug program, they're taking Challenge, they're taking Brave, they're taking these substantial programs, and they are making a good faith effort to reduce their risk level, but they just can't get there, then wardens should be looking at them for exceptions. And you and I have seen the cases where, you know, they started as high, and then they were high medium, and then they were medium, and you know, they got to medium low, but that wasn't enough.
Hey,
they ran
out
of time.
If I got a guy, if I'm a warden of a this is just me talking. If I'm a warden of a medium, I got a guy with a 2050 release date, but yet he does all this stuff, and you go ahead and say, okay, he gets a year off on FSA because he's got a whole lot of time, and then he's gonna, by the time he gets to his 5-factor review for SCA, and he'd been down for so long, he's gonna hopefully call. Actually, I wouldn't do that because he could earn 10 years in an RRC if I did it too soon, right?
Well, but the Bureau is also, and we haven't talked a lot about it, but we did mention it on the show. They are now looking at the conditional release date, the conditional placement date in terms of classification. So somebody who maybe has a long time to go, right? But now they're applying that time credit, right? And they're applying their time credit. The Bureau is now going to look at that conditional placement date. So those 10 yeah. years that's on the back end, but it right. might be something that gets them out of a penitentiary okay. and down right. into a medium.
Look, yes. I got to apologize to our listeners because Susan and I, we always drag this thing. We drag it always into FSA and BOP because why? We're BOP people. So let's take a pause. Let's look at this thing that's under the Sentencing Commission, right? And people can weigh in on this thing that hasn't even happened yet, folks.
Right. And that's Nor important.
Will note. It? But it might.
We're so, in the public comment phase. So this right. is the time when from when family members and even folks who are facing federal prison, right. you're sitting there on the outside.
Right.
And this is the time we have through February 10th to kind of weigh in on it. I would like to see this application made written in a way that is more broadly available.
Yes.
That is my
and
position.
That's it. And it has to do with the judge, the judicial branch, and the PSR writer who is connected to that, right?
Right,
and
absolutely. So,
and that's before the Bureau of Prisons. I just want to let everybody know that. This is something absolutely. That has to do with that branch of government, not the Bruce and Susan branch.
Yeah,
the that
Bureau
branch.
Has no control over this.
Right.
Now, one of the questions asked about was retroactivity. And obviously, that's always a big question. They will not even address the question of retroactivity until they decide through. If they're going to move forward with it.
Yeah.
Right. Right now, it's a proposed amendment. We've got public comment. There'll be hearings after that. They will make a decision if they're going to add this in. And if they add this in, then we start the process over again. They wait for because once the commission passes the amendment. Let's assume it's positive and they pass the amendment. Then there's that waiting period, right? They'll pass it. And then usually it ends up probably May, like around probably May or June of this year. If it's passed, it'll pass. And then they'll be like, okay, now what? Now we have that delay until probably about November, right?
All right.
And as long as Congress doesn't act, then it becomes official. It is not until this all happens that then they go back and say, hey, does it make sense to apply retroactivity? And there's public comment and there's hearings and they take a vote. And, you know, so like that was one of the first, I think that was probably made the I don't know how fast, but that was a quick comment. Is this going to be retroactive? Don't know. They won't even talk about it.
Right. And if that happens, can you imagine me being the chief United States probation officer said, Dr. Giddings, you're one of our best officers and you're so prolific and you've done 800 PSRs. And I need you to go back and look at every PSR you've done and looked at all their programming.
But
to see if there's retroactive.
You and I had been talking about for a long time is the PSR itself, you know, our unlocking federal prison designation and pre-sentence investigation report. The bulk of that book, 2/3 of that book is about the PSR. And we talk about things like making sure that if you're participating in treatment, that gets put into the PSR. Mm-hmm. If you've completed programming, if you completed these things, and that's something that the attorneys need to be paying attention to, right. The PSR is the most important document.
The gospel.
Most important document. Someone who is looking at federal prison needs to make sure it's right. This is not the time to, you know, leave off information or shade information. Well, you know, the right. judge might go harder on me if he knows I've got this problem or that problem. Mm-hmm. Take care of like that ship has sailed. Like you've got to like put that information out there. We've had a couple of recent conversations with different attorneys about this very issue. This is not the time to withhold information. And we see the PSRs. I mean, we see a lot of them. Some are very, very good. Some not so good from our perspective. Why? Because, again, we're looking at a PSR from what does the Bureau look at? And probation officers write PSR for the courts. Defense attorneys look at PSRs in terms of criminal history points and sentencing guideline points. That's it. That's what they look at. That's what their job is. That's what their focus is. Yeah. And the Bureau looks at the whole thing. So in that regard, maybe this is good because defense attorneys will be paying attention to that section of the PSR.
Closer attention. Closer
attention. A lot closer
attention.
For sure. Probation officers may be providing a lot more detail, asking those questions about what that person has done and hasn't done. In terms of financial crimes, you know, when you know you're going to prison, and we talk to folks, some of them are like, I'm trying to, like, you know, but when you know you're going, resolving some of this debt, you may look at it as paying some bills, but the court looks at it as taking care of the victims. And that's part of this. That's in here, is what are you doing to address the issues of the victims involved? You know, what are you doing to kind of repair the community that you damaged? If you're a drug offender, you know, and you haven't been remanded, you know, you have, you're out, you got a bond, you know, this is that time to be addressing your own addiction issues. And if this was just money and you don't have any addiction issues, what are you doing to kind of repair the community you harmed? Because you were dealing drugs in the community, you have harmed your community. What are you doing? That's what they're looking at. That's why they include things like community service in here.
I was going to say community service. Yeah.
Yeah. They include in there, and they're looking at, you know, remember that old 80s song, "What Have You Done For Me Lately?" That's what they're talking about here. I just feel like we have a significant portion of the population that are not even going to have an opportunity to benefit from this because they're not being released on pretrial.
I say, give it a go. If you're on holdover status or you're sitting in a county jail, do everything you can to get to AA meeting, NA meeting, whatever class, whatever program. If you could take a correspondence thing through their respective education department. I know I have some state cases that they give them a tablet and they can take all these courses. Mm-hmm. It's awesome, man. It's awesome.
Is looking at expanding tablets.
So,
is expanding tablet access programming. You know, and that may be something that in the public comments and the Sentencing Commission can actually address those, you know, add language in this that addresses the kind of things that someone who is sitting in detention, who wasn't given a bond, paying attention to, if they're volunteering to work, making it clear that they want probation to ask those questions, not just, okay, he's been in pretrial detention at FCC, whichever one, and FCC, not FCC, MDC, Brooklyn, and he stayed out of trouble. He hasn't got any incident reports. Okay, ask more questions. And maybe if they specifically address programming and work and things like that for individuals that are in detention and not just generically addressing this post-offense phase, recognizing the number of individuals that won't be allowed to be back in the community. And defense attorneys, you know, where they can, lobbying to get their clients out of pretrial detention so that, again, they have that opportunity. Because it seems like it could have a really significant impact on the amount of the sentence, on the length of the sentence. I just think the way it's written right now, it's still just chipping at the edges. It's not real reform.
Right. But the good news is it's there. It's a possibility.
They've opened the door. And that's positive.
It's a possible mechanism to help people that are in this kind of pre-sentenced phase to help their pre-sentence report and their standing before the conclusion of their sentencing. And I think that's a good thing. Yes, it's disproportionate. Yes, there are problems with it. But by the same token, there's problems with FSA on the other side of the rainbow here.
Yeah. So, and it's some of the same problems, interestingly.
Right. And so, don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater per se. But yes, it is something there. Look, we hope that some form of it goes through. We're positive people, right? Even though we are seasoned about stuff. But yeah, I think it's fantastic. But folks, weigh in on that stuff, okay?
Absolutely.
Weigh in. It's just the comment period. Please, for the love of God, weigh in. Share your comments. I like Susan's idea about tablet-based learning. So that way people can be actively engaged in their cell or whatever, working on some things while they're pretrial. I think that's a wonderful
100%. Thing, so. And again, it's the law, the court. I mean, the criminal justice system should be incentivizing programming and activities which improves the person's place in the world, whether that's education, mm-hmm. vocational training, anger management, dealing with addiction. Those are all really important things. And to kind of pick the winners and losers of incentivizing, for me, is the frustrating part. I am excited they've opened the door. They've acknowledged that there's this opportunity, but they've got to do a better job of addressing it. And if this is what they want, if this is where we want to go in the future, then they've got to make sure that the Bureau, congressmen and senators, make sure the Bureau has the resources to provide more programming in the detention centers for that population, because programming is not the priority there, right? They're being held there for the marshals. And whether there's some funding that, additional funding that maybe comes from the marshals to the Bureau. I doubt it. The marshals don't like to give up money, or directly to the Bureau to expand programming in detention centers. I mean, if this is the direction that we as a country want to go, then they got to put their money where their mouth is.
But even, and even still, I would get a list. So it's still unfair to the people that are in county jails holding over that aren't in federal detention centers. Then I would get a list of all the U.S. Marshal contracts of all the detention centers and then get them curriculum, right? Whatever curriculum is blessed and ordained for this.
Right.
Get them education materials to those county jails. So
absolutely.
That there's access to something to people that are in county jails holding over and people that are in FDCs and MDCs and other federal places holding.
Absolutely. Up. Absolutely. Yeah. And again, like I said, this is just another kind of put your money where your mouth is. If this is what you want, they can't expect a detention center that does not have the same number in terms of, say, teachers to inmate ratio, because the focus isn't, it's those cadres that all of our detention centers have, right? Those sentenced individuals, that's where their focus is. So anyway, that's that. Something along the same lines, very quickly, because we're almost at the end of the show today. If you're not paying attention, the Bureau is now doing a podcast. Deputy Director Smith, he's done two already. They are available via the Bureau's BOP.gov website. If you just kind of scroll down, I think they're calling them transparency talks, I think is what they're calling them. But I was really interested in the most recent one that was published. The head of facilities was having a conversation with Deputy Director Smith. And one of the things they talked about was expansion of vocational training. So super quick, and maybe we can jump into a little bit more on this next week, but the Bureau got a bunch of money in the Big Beautiful Bill to fix a lot of broken stuff and a lot of deferred maintenance. And there are housing units all over the agency that they've just kind of closed the door and locked it and kind of went down the hallway because they've got too many things going on, whether it's roofs or plumbing or whatever the case is. Excuse me. And so they got this money, and it's one time money. So they need to spend it, and they need to spend it well. And one of the things they're looking at is the inmate work programs. You know, they don't need to pay contractors to get all of these things done. So they are reactivating the paving crews that used to crews of inmates who had been specially mm-hmm. trained. And then they would literally drive to different institutions. They'd have a crew and they'd go and they'd do these paving jobs. They're looking at a roofing crew. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the various, and I have been like, my 30 years in the Bureau, I was like yelling about this, is the plumbing and the carpentry, the welding, the roofs, all of these different things that need to get done. There are Department of Labor apprenticeship programs tied to every single one of these work skill sets. And so what they're actually doing now, finally, I'm so excited about it, is working with education for these guys on these work details so that they're not just, you know, okay, you're the plumber. Great. Okay. You're learning to be a plumber. No, you're getting actual credit toward a Department of Labor apprenticeship program, not a little bureau certificate, so they're coordinating with education to give these guys the classroom and the hands-on work experience so that then they, when they leave, they have credentials that can help with employment. This country has a deficit in trade skills right now. It's incredible. That's another soapbox that I like to jump on, but that's another story. But go out, watch that podcast, listen to what he's talking about. And yeah, they're talking about, you know, some of the things they're doing to try to, again, kind of get these things fixed. And there's some interesting things that have been out about how they're going to just kind of maximize these funds. But the fact that they are going to be actively using vocational training.
Yeah.
So that they get the work done, they don't spend as much money because they're not paying an outside contractor. They're not spending the months to go through the contracting process, which you and I know is so slow, and so that they can get to a point moving faster. So we can talk about it more next week. I was very excited about it, but check that out. And we'll talk about that along with the inmate work program in general, UniCor trust fund and the regular inmate performance.
Yeah, we'll do that. And then later on, I do want to talk about management variables and public safety factors, but we'll do that. Maybe we'll do some time on that, because I think we did have some movement on that in our Facebook group.
Yes.
So, and that was true. And I think you remember this, Susan, when you and I both activated Carswell, we were working closely with Dublin officials and literally stealing or borrowing their best plumbers and electricians, and they do their time with us because we needed them to help retrofit that hospital. And I think we could be doing that. There's a lot of talented guys and women out there that have a lot of skill sets. We take a hard look at what we already have in terms of talent. We could put together some labor cadres in a loving way. And, you know,
absolutely. I had a gal on my caseload. And you may or may not remember, her name was Carly. That was her first name. And she was a little itty bitty tiny thing. And, she came into prison with no high school diploma, 3 kiddos, and her husband threw her under the bus when it came to sentencing. And she actually got a longer term than he did. We're running out of time. She got her GED. She got into a welding apprenticeship program. And when Bill Clinton, did some clemencies for women in custody, she actually got her sentence cut and went home. And about 6 months after she left, she wrote back in and she asked that her letter be read to the gals on the housing unit, and was talking about how she walked out and within a week she had a job as a welder, as a welder's helper, so that she could get to her journeyman status. And so now she had a job that she could support her kids and take care of herself and not deal with the lout that like threw her under the bus and got her in prison. So vocational jobs are the way to go.
It is. All right. That's a wrap. Thanks everybody for listening. Come to our Facebook group, First Step Act, early release from federal prison, our YouTube channel, First Step Act. Of course, all of our shows are cataloged on latalkradio.com. You go to our show and they're all listed. You can download the MP4 videos or the MP3 audio. It's all there for you. We're on Apple Podcast and Amazon Audible. So until next time,
all right.
We'll see everybody here on Around the Block. Take care, everybody. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.